is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are going to talk some NBA. Jay, the matchup that we're all anticipating for Thursday night.
Oh, they're gonna be on that big winning streak going into it, right, Mike?
Unfortunately, the luster was taken off a little bit off of the Bucks-Lakers game on Thursday. Not that it still won't be hopefully good, but who knows? I don't know what Anthony Davis's situation is with the ankle, if he's going to be able to play or he's going to sit out a couple more games.
Yeah, so it was definitely evident that they missed him tonight, Mike. It was the first time, really, that I watched the whole first half and then the fourth quarter of the game. And the first half, the Lakers were in complete control of the game. LeBron was doing LeBron things. I think he had like six assists in the first quarter. I think it was 9, 3, and 6 in the first quarter, and it looked like they were kind of up to their old tricks and everyone was playing well. But give the Pacers credit. They kept fighting and fighting. Sabonis had a great game.
He's good, by the way.
Yeah, just a little bit. He's just a little good. But they fought, and you know, I have to say for the Lakers, I mean, Dwight Howard was unstoppable around the basket. At one point, I don't know what he ended up, but I know he was 9 of 9 from the field.
10 of 10.
10 of 10. 9 of 9 from the field, pretty much, I think they were all slam dunks, feeding from LeBron or from someone else. But he just played dominant.
Unfortunately,
he can't make free throws.
Unfortunately, he contributed to their 8 of 17 performance at the line.
Yeah.
Which kind of doomed him. And LeBron, 4 for 8. We talked about it last week. You know, I mentioned how, you know, I think that has been one of the things that if you want to point to an Achilles heel for LeBron, his ability to knock down free throws in big moments has been somewhat suspect. And he only, what we think, shot 73% for his career. Yeah. So 4 for 8 tonight.
So I don't know. I don't remember who was calling the game tonight. It's Spencer Dedes or whatever. He normally does football, but he was filling in tonight for NBA TV. It was on NBA TV tonight, and when they say, oh, man, the Lakers are leaving LeBron and Dwight Howard on the floor in the last 2 minutes, anytime they go to the basket, they should just follow him because they're not making free throws. When you're LeBron and you're getting called out by some random announcer that I've probably heard call a lot of Browns football games because he's not normally the best announcer in the world, okay, calling you out because you can't make your free throws is not a good sign.
No, it's not a good sign for LeBron. It's too bad. I mean, I mean, again, this all leads into Thursday's game and the sort of the excitement that I think would have been in place had both teams continued to win and gone into that game with, you know, identical three-loss records. But, so, you know, this loss by the Lakers kind of takes the luster off Thursday's game a little bit. But the reality is that the Lakers aren't going to win without Anthony Davis anyway. So
yeah, I agree. And the thing is this, too, like, I had a whole diatribe that I told you before we started recording about us before the game started tonight. I was thinking, man, if the Lakers win tonight, I'm going to say to Mike, is it possible that the Lakers could go 73-9. Is it possible? And I think, obviously, I don't think it's possible. You got to imagine that LeBron's going to sit some games. He's not going to play all 82 regular season games, no matter how he feels. I just don't think that would be in the best long-term interest. And I just, like you said, I don't know if this roster, when one of them is out, is constructed. You know, maybe if they're playing the Cavs, or they could probably sit both LeBron and AD against the Cavs and be fine.
Hey, the Cavs moved into, they have the worst point differential in the league now. Did you know that?
Well, that's a good stat there, Mike.
That is a good stat.
It's a good tanking stat for you. But I just think that I think they obviously need both of those guys to be successful. And, you know, I think they're definitely a buyout candidate. They need another, and not like the buyout players are going to, like, be huge for them. But I really, really think, like, I'm just going to throw this name out there, even though Memphis continuously says they're not going to buy him out. I think Andre Iguodala would be a great fit for that roster, and bringing his kind of championship pedigree to the table, which is kind of weird that I'm saying that about Andre Iguodala, but obviously he was a part of the great Warriors runs, and I think he would be a great buyout candidate for them, if it ever presents itself. I don't know that it will, but I think that would be a good place for him to go.
Yeah, Iguodala fits in a lot of places. I mean, I think any contending team. If you said, hey, would you want Andre Iguodala? I think they'd all say yes. So it's just a matter of, A, is Memphis going to toe the line and just say we're going to hold on to him and sit him out if he doesn't, you know, if they can't find a trade partner? Or do they end up releasing him and he gets bought out and then teams can pick him up and compete and see who's going to, you know, see where he wants to go? I don't know. I don't know where he ends up. I don't know how hard of a line Memphis is going to take, whether or not, you know, clearly if they have to trade for him, the Lakers have little or no chance of being able to put together any kind of package.
I don't know. Kuzma might be on the trading block, man.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is, and I forget when or where I read this, but, you know, Kuzma only makes, he's still on his rookie deal, so he only makes like $2 million. Yeah. So if you trade him, you're not, you know, when you're talking about matching salaries, like you can't get anything back for Kuzma, I guess is my point. So regardless of whatever limitations Kuzma has, and, you know, he's not really a great fit with LeBron and AD because they all kind of occupy the same space on the floor. But you put Kuzma in a trade, and there's not much going to be able to come back at $2 million that's going to be anywhere near the type of player that Kuzma theoretically is. So I don't know. If push comes to shove, I'm not sure what happens with Iguodala. I don't know. It seems like Memphis is going to take that hard line, but who knows? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know where he's going to end up. And, you know, your other question that you asked about, you know, can the Lakers win 73 games? And I think the interesting question is, which team of the Bucks or the Lakers is more likely, if you had to bet, which one's more likely to win 73 games? I would still say Milwaukee, just because I think the bottom of the East is still worse than the bottom of the West. Well, you look at the two. I mean, in the East, you've got the Hawks, Cavs, yeah, Knicks, well, Wizards, Bulls. I mean, all those teams are, you know, the Milwaukee should crush them every single time.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I mean, I'm not trying to say that Milwaukee's record's slightly inflated, but they have played the Cavs three times already.
There's no doubt. I mean, you see when they lost the other night to the Mavs without Luka, I mean, clearly Bledsoe's out with the fractured fibula, which I'm not sure I even understand that injury, that he's only out 2 weeks with a fractured fibula. It must be like,
hey, man, I was out for 2 weeks with a fractured fibula. I had a hairline fracture in my right foot.
Okay. Well,
my eighth grade year cross country. And the doctor told me that I had to be out for 6 weeks. And 2 weeks later, I ran in a cross-country meet.
Okay, well, you know your fibula is not in your foot, right?
Well, fibula is in your foot.
No. Your fibula is in your leg. No, okay, it's in your leg.
Regardless, that's where it was. I know I was
just
a fibula.
Like we talked about before the podcast, I'm not a doctor, and apparently neither are you.
I might need a doctor tomorrow at the current rate, but I don't know.
Maybe. But you know, I guess my point here is that Bledsoe's an important part of what they do, and we saw in the playoffs when he went in the tank that had a huge impact on their ability to play. And the other night, you know, Giannis goes for 48 and they still lose to the Mavs without Luka. So they're a little bit vulnerable, but I think that I don't think either team is getting to 73. I don't think either team's getting to 70 wins, to be honest with you. But if I was going to bet on one,
I think 65 is a good spot.
Yeah, if I was going to bet on one team or the other, though, I would say Milwaukee's more likely to get there because it doesn't. Giannis still seems like he's in the indestructible mode of his career, so he's not going down with injury. Whereas I think Anthony Davis is probably going to continue to miss games here and there, and it seems like LeBron is intent, like he was in his whatever. I think that was his last year in Cleveland where he played all 82 games. Seems like LeBron might be on that same sort of revenge mission to prove to everybody that he's not on the downside of his career. But you got to think that at some point, especially if they build up a little bit of a cushion at the top of the, you know, at the top of the West, that he's going to pick and choose and maybe sit out a game or two that they think they can win.
I think he's going to sit out Christmas Day, Mike.
You think?
No.
There might be a fine forthcoming where LeBron to sit out on Christmas Day.
Well,
a good
okay,
chance.
So the Warriors getting fined for sitting their whole team for that travesty of a game that we're going to have to watch in the middle of the day?
Well, they're not sitting their whole team. They just
I
don't
know,
have
I'm just kidding.
They just don't have anybody left. That team's a disaster.
Let me tell you what the NBA is regretting. That 5 o'clock game, middle of the day. That's killing
well,
their mojo.
And then they got another stinker because you got the Nuggets and the Pelicans as the nightcap.
Oh, man, come on.
I can't imagine that's going to be a good game.
Well, I have to say, like, I'm really only interested in two of the games, and I won't watch one of them because we'll be doing family stuff. The only game Let's save it for next time.
So, I think, again, Thursday night's game is still going to be exciting between the Bucks and the Lakers. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
We might have to do a reaction pod right after, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, if AD doesn't play, it obviously takes away from it. Clearly, with Bledsoe out, that impacts the Bucks, but it should still be entertaining. If you go by my preseason predictions, those were my two finals teams. So I'm feeling pretty good about that, and it should continue to be. I think it should be an interesting game, nonetheless, despite the fact that it's kind of disappointing that they each had a loss heading into it. And you know, the fact that the Mavericks. I mean, let's jump off the Bucks and Lakers for a second. And the Mavericks beating the Bucks without Luka was probably the most surprising result since the last time we were on the podcast. I mean, I certainly did not expect that game to go the way that it did. And Porzingis had a good game, and Hardaway Jr., I think, had 28 in that game. And maybe the Mavs, again, I give you credit for spotting them in the preseason in your prediction, having them in the playoffs.
Hey,
but they've
I got
they've
one
really,
thing right, Mike.
That's right. Hey, they've played really, really well. And, you know, maybe this couple-game stretch without Luka gets Porzingis going, and now Luka comes back, and the two of them are both, you know, cooking and going well. And who knows? I mean, they're clearly entrenched at the top of the West. I mean, I think Luka's not going to regress at this point. So I think they're going to stay. I think they're going to stay right up there where they are.
Yeah. The only other prediction I made at the beginning of the year that I feel proud about is Miami. I'm really proud that I made that pick before the season started. But I definitely agree that the Mavs are definitely, as long as listen, ankle sprains are a pain in the butt. Like, you don't truly know how long Luka's going to be out. Like, they say he's going to be out 1 to 2 weeks, but, you know, ankle sprains have been known to linger and linger and linger.
Well, you certainly don't want to rush him back. And I think
the thing
with an ankle injury is that, in my experience, and I was lucky enough when I was playing that I never really had ankle injuries, but I knew lots of guys that did. And it seems like once you twist your ankle once, you just become more and more susceptible.
It's going to keep happening. It's going to keep happening. Yeah. Trust me. I know firsthand.
And I don't know. You know, again, I don't know Luka's history with ankle sprains and whether or not he had any when he was playing over in Europe or what. But again, it's not something that you want to rush him back. The interesting thing will be, I think they're playing. They still have three more games against. I think they play the Celtics, actually Sixers, and maybe either the Raptors or the Heat. I can't remember.
It's Celtics, Sixers, and Raptors.
Okay, so they got those three games coming up, which are obviously, you know, three of the better teams in the league. And so, you know, if they lose three in a row, do they feel some pressure as they drop a spot or two in the standings, do they feel some pressure to bring Luka back early? I would think the answer would be no.
No, I think they would play it very conservatively. I think they relax. I mean, the next two games after that are the Spurs and the Warriors, and then they do play the Lakers on the 29th. So that if I'm the Mavs, that's when I try to target bringing him back. That's the game right there. The 29th.
Yeah, and you just want him healthy. I mean, the bottom line is if it takes a month to get him healthy, it's not ideal, but let's face it, if Dallas, we've said it before, if they continue to play at this pace and Luka continues to play as well as he did, I mean, this season is clearly gravy. I mean, even people who thought they were going to make the playoffs didn't have them at any point in the top four in the Western Conference. So they're going to be really cautious with them, and they're going to sit them out and not let them, you know, not let them rush back too early. Yep. Kind of like the Pelicans are doing with Zion.
Oh,
he's returned to weight bearing. He's returned to full weight bearing activities.
Hey, let me tell you what the Pelicans are not going to be doing. They're not going to be going to the playoffs. I'll tell you that much.
No, they're not. I would have to say, unless Zion comes back very, very soon and he turns out to be peak Michael Jordan, I don't think there's a whole lot of chance that the Pelicans are going to climb out of that. Plus, they said today that they're putting Jrue Holiday out there on the trading market. So that'd be an interesting piece that a lot of teams could use. I would love to see him on the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't know how it could happen, but if you put Jrue Holiday on the Bucks, I think that would.
Would you trade Eric Bledsoe for Jrue Holiday?
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
I mean, I think they're, you know, they both have reputations as being good defenders, but I think Holiday's a little bit better, and I think Holiday can shoot it more. I think Holiday is, I don't know, I just think he's a better all-around player. He had some playoff success the year when the Pelicans killed the Blazers. He just completely dominated that Blazer backcourt in that series. And so I'd like to see, that would be one trade that I think could really make a difference in who wins the title. If one of those contending teams were to get Jrue Holiday, I think it would make a big difference. Now, it's tough because, again, a lot of these teams just don't have assets to trade, or they can't match salaries, and it's hard to figure out where these guys would go. Like, how, you know, if Memphis is really going to have to trade Iguodala, there's a limited market. If, you know, there's a limited market for Jrue Holiday, there's a limited market for Kevin Love. I mean, just to match up the salaries and to find the teams who have a need in those particular areas, it's tough. And so it'll be interesting to see here, as, you know, obviously on the 15th, the trade window opened up for all those guys that were signed as free agents this summer, and nothing's happened to this point. So it'll be interesting to see going forward when and if the trade market heats up, if we get closer to the deadline, or some things going to happen sooner rather than later. I'm not sure. It'll be interesting to watch that.
Hey, I just saw a ticker on the NBA TV here. They're saying Luka's likely out through the first of the year.
I mean, that still puts him on about a little bit more than 2 weeks, right? Yep. That puts him on about three.
The thing says likely out for the rest of this calendar year. I don't know. No, we'll see what happens.
So that puts him at like 2.5 weeks if he would come back in their first game. If they'd have him come back in their first game after the new year. But like we said earlier, I don't think they're going to rush him. I think he comes back when he feels and they feel that he's completely ready and healthy. Yep. You're not going to risk turning this into a chronic ankle injury for a guy who's 20 years old and is almost averaging a triple double. You're just not going to mess around with that.
All right. So next thing we're going to talk about, let's talk about the Cavs. Yes, we'll go to the Cavs. I was impressed last week when they almost beat our favorite player, James Harden, and the Rockets. My God, that was a terrible game to watch. It was exciting that the Cavs were in it, but my God, I just can't stand watching him play basketball anymore. I want to gouge my eyes out every single time that I'm watching him. But anyways, they kept it close, and they had a chance to win at the end, and they didn't. But then the following night, I thought for sure, oh man, back-to-back, they're going to they had to fly to San Antonio. They were going to lose because San Antonio is going to make the playoffs somehow, some way. I'm starting to really buy into the fact that San Antonio is not going to make the playoffs because the Cavs beat them on a back-to-back, and San Antonio looks like a mess.
I just don't know what to make of them. And we talked about them a lot last week, so I don't want to beat a dead horse here. But I mean, what do they do? I mean, they're young guys. I don't think Murray's been as good as they thought they were gonna, you know, as good as they thought he was gonna be. And
he looked way better last year, Mike. In my opinion.
And again, granted, he's coming off, just like Porzingis, he's coming off a torn ACL. So you can, you know, it usually takes guys a year before they get back to where they were previous to the injury. And so you got to give them a little bit of a pass, but it doesn't help their team this year. And we know what DeRozan and Aldridge's limitations are. And so I just don't know. I don't see how they leapfrog up into the playoffs from where they're at. They're not better than some of those teams up above them. And I know we've spent a lot of time talking about the bottom of the West, but a couple interesting developments there. Phoenix got DeAndre Ayton back tonight. So we'll see what
he's already missed a dunk. It looks like the time off didn't help.
Well, there you go. But it, again, who knows? Aaron Baines has been out, I think. So getting Ayton back at least fills that void that Baines had been playing really well in his absence. The Sacramento Kings got De'Aaron Fox back tonight. I think he scored 17, but they lost. And but again,
Portland's only a game out of the playoffs.
Right. I mean, long term. But Sacramento's back in. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, I think Fox coming back. They got Bagley back a couple games ago. So Sacramento's almost back to full strength. You know, we talked a little bit at the beginning of the season about how, you know, maybe Luke Walton's not a very good coach. And, you know, it seems like now they've rebounded. They're also playing at a much slower pace than they did last year, which has helped their defense but really hasn't done much for their offense. And, of course, without Bagley and Fox, who are two guys who want to get up and down the floor and run, they just kind of changed up their style to kind of fit the personnel that they had. So now that those two guys are back, it'll be interesting to see if Sacramento starts playing at a faster pace or not. But and then the Minnesota Timberwolves have lost seven in a row. So it's a,
you see, did you see the Karl Anthony Towns thing that he did? He tried to dunk it and he slipped out of his hands, and then he grabbed it and flipped it, and they called a travel on him. Did you see that or not?
No, I did not.
It was featured prominently last night on ESPN during the "Come On, Man" segment. Okay. Randy Moss used it. It was pretty funny that he used a basketball thing in the "Come On, Man."
There you go. Well, the bottom of the West, again, the Spurs aren't climbing out of it. And, you know, we were talking about the Cavs, but that the bottom of the West is going to shake out. And it's, you know, you look at the playoff picture out there, and, you know, I know you had the Mavericks in back from the beginning of the season, and I had the Pelicans and the Warriors in. I think we all had the Warriors in.
We both had the Warriors. I had the Warriors at six.
Yeah,
so.
Right. Yeah, and so did I. And so otherwise, you know, the team I didn't see was the Mavs. I did have the Blazers out, and I had the Spurs out, so I feel pretty good about that. And then you could throw all these other teams, Thunder, Kings, Suns. You know, nobody expected the Suns to be even in contention at all, so they're kind of outperforming. And we'll see how it all shakes out. I mean, there's six teams, it seems, clearly in the West, and six teams in the East where there's a clear line of demarcation between team six and each one of the conferences where there's a significant drop off once you get past that sixth team.
And I think that really comes down to our next point, which just the unpredictability of this season. Here, let me just say a few things that happened in the last 48 hours. The Grizzlies beat the Heat after the Heat have been on a tear, okay? The Grizzlies arguably are one of the worst teams in the NBA. The Grizzlies beat the Heat. The Wizards smoked the Pistons. Now, I want to be clear here. The Pistons are not world beaters, but everyone had counted the Wizards out at the beginning of the season. Like, they weren't going to win 15 games. And some people had the Pistons, like, fringe playoffs, you know, Blake Griffin and everything. Well, let me just tell you, the Pistons, I think their definitely roster should be better than the Wizards, but they got absolutely demolished. It wasn't even close. And then the other thing that happened yesterday was the Bulls are up, like, they scored like 75 points in the first half, have a 26-point lead, and they lost to the Thunder. Chris Paul had, like, one of the greatest quarters of his career. I think he scored 23 points or 21 points in the fourth quarter, ended with 30 for the game, and the Thunder come back and beat the Bulls. Now, once again, we're talking about all these bottom feeder teams that – none of these teams are going anywhere. It's just there's other things that are going on that are super unpredictable, and I don't think anyone would ever like question that the league is way more competitive in a sense now than it was over the last few years, because truly, like, the last few years, we pretty much knew who was going to win. Like, you'd come in and be like, okay, well, I know that the LeBron and the Cavs are going to be in the finals and the Warriors are going to be in the finals, and here are these other few teams that are going to do really well and probably be in the Eastern Conference Finals. But I just think there's so many other, like, interesting sub-stories going on right now that you wouldn't have been able to say last year.
Well, there's five. I still think there's five really bad teams that anytime you look at one of these teams playing, unless they're playing each other.
Like tonight when the Knicks scored 143 on the Hawks.
Right. Well, Trae Young had, 40? I think he had 43 or 42, something like that. But, yeah, the Knicks just put it to the Hawks. But those two, again, so the five worst teams, Knicks, Cavs, and Hawks in the East, and the Warriors and the Pelicans in the West, are the teams that just seem like they have no functionability at all. And then everybody else, you know, I mean, not that they're good, because they're certainly not, but it seems like they at least have some capability. The Wizards have a league-leading offense. You know, the Bulls have some young talent. The Grizzlies have young talent. The Spurs are the Spurs.
The Wizards also have John Wall dunking, Mike.
That's right. I saw that on Twitter today. I was totally surprised. So somebody threw him like a little alley-oop, and he went up and dunked it pretty easily. So I still don't think he's due back at all this year, but that was interesting to see that if he's already dunking and it's only, you know, December of 2019 and they're saying he's not going to play again until next fall. It's interesting. I don't know what it means. I don't know how dunking correlates to his ability to come back and play functional NBA basketball, but just seeing that was surprising. I certainly did not expect to see John Wall throwing down dunks at this point in his rehab process.
Yeah.
And he didn't look that fat to me. So,
hey, that's good. Maybe he's been doing some elliptical and treadmill work.
He's trying to outwork Nikola Jokic.
Yeah. I just think it's just interesting just how the league's playing out this year. And obviously, we've stressed it multiple times. The top six and the top six in both conferences are pretty much set. It's kind of intriguing to watch the 7 through 12 teams or 7 through 11 teams kind of battling for those last two spots, though, which is, yeah. No, I guess we normally see that in the East. We see a lot of teams that are kind of just fighting to have to get, I guess, fighting to get slaughtered in the first round of the playoffs. But I think it's interesting, especially the West, because I think, you know, you never know what can happen in the West, because the West is definitely just wacky. And I'm not saying that an 8 seed is going to beat a 1 seed, but what I would say is the 8 seed could make it like a little bit interesting, whereas I don't think the 8 seed in the East will make it interesting at all.
No, I think Orlando and Brooklyn are probably going to be those two teams, which is where we are right now, and I don't see either one of those teams being able to challenge the Bucks or the Sixers, who I think are going to finish 1-2. So, you know, that, like, I'm looking at the playoffs. I'm looking at the teams in the East that are the top eight, and all eight of the teams that are in my top eight preseason are in the teams that are in the top eight. You know, we talked about the West, how we're missing a couple teams each, and in the East, we have all the teams. And I think the East was a little bit easier to predict, simply because I think the bottom of the East is just worse. But yeah, you're right. The Nets and Magic, who are the likely 7 and 8 seeds, are not going to step up and challenge the Bucks and the Sixers mm-hmm. in the first round next spring. I would be highly, highly dubious of that.
Oh, hey, Conley played for a quarter and then is out for the rest of the game. His left hamstring hurt again.
Yeesh. If you're Utah, you got to be bummed out. I mean, he hasn't lived up to what they thought that he was going to be, and if he continues to get hurt, it's really going to put, you know, it puts the clamps on their ability to get what their ceiling is. I mean, their ceiling is far, far lower if they're either A, getting no Mike Conley, or B, getting a compromised or on the downside of his career Mike Conley, like they've seen to this point. So I still like Utah. I mean, I like their players. I like what they did in the offseason, but to this point, it hasn't panned out the way that they, you know, the way that they had hoped.
Yep, I agree.
Hey, I got good news for you on the Cavs, too.
What's that?
Our assist leader has moved up to 3.0. So we've cracked that. We've cracked that elusive 3.0 assist mark.
I will say he's looked better.
Darius Garland. Darius Garland, congratulations.
He's looked better. I'm not ready to say that he's going to be a great player, but he's looked better over the last few games.
Yeah, he had a good game the other night. I thought he played pretty well against the Spurs. And you know, we said it before, it's early. I still am a little nervous because I don't know what his above average skill is. And I've said that the last couple times we jumped on. But
outfit picking. I've said this multiple times.
All right, there you go. Hey,
wardrobe.
it's not what you want out of the number five pick, that his best ability is his ability to pick out a outfit before the draft.
Well, maybe he just needs to play like 5 years like Andrew Wiggins before he figures it out.
Maybe. Come on, they've lost seven in a row. That's a little disheartening. And Wiggins, I mean, you look at his stats across the board, and he's averaging like 24 a game, and his assists are way up. I mean, way up from him is, you know, up from like 1.6. He's up over, I think, 3, coming up close to 4. He's actually rebounding a little bit.
Darius has a goal.
Yeah, that's right. That's it. Although, you know, we talked about me stumping for Jared Culver before that, and
oof,
I saw the stat that he's shooting like 46% from the line, which is
Mike, I have to say, you and I both misfired on that one. Oh boy, he looks bad.
It makes me very, very nervous that he is shooting that poorly from the line, because usually free throw shooting is something that translates into whether or not you're ever going to become a competent three-point shooter. I mean, you're not seeing too many guys who are going to shoot 35%+ from three that are going to shoot below 50% at the free throw line. I mean, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit worried about him. So I'm looking up his stats as we speak. So Culver is averaging 23 minutes a game, 8.6 points a game, 3 rebounds, 2.2 assists. And where's his shooting? Here we go. So he is currently shooting 37% from the field. He's shooting 25% from three. And he is shooting a robust 43% from the line.
I mean, that's terrible. That's terrible for a guy in his position.
I mean, that's terrible for Wilt Chamberlain.
Well, I mean, Mike, I'm pretty certain that you and I could shoot 43% from the free throw line.
I think I could shoot 43% blindfolded.
I mean, that's terrible. I mean, I'm not a great free throw shooter. I'm probably like I don't want to put my number out there, but I wouldn't say that I'm a 75% free throw shooter, but I'm definitely better than 43%. I'll tell you that much.
All right, so all things being equal, this is a question that I always have, and I know I think Malcolm Gladwell actually did a whole podcast on this, but if you're that bad, like if you were Shaq, and you were that bad at the free throw line,
Shoot underhand.
Like, why not? Like, I know it's a manly
pride
thing.
It's a man thing, man.
Right. And you're like, you don't want to do it because it looks silly and people are going to make fun of you. But I mean, if you could make more, which I got to believe you could make more than 43%, why wouldn't you give it a try? I mean, if it was part of your livelihood and it could make you a better player and less susceptible to being fouled at the end of games and all these things, like, it just, to me, I don't know why you wouldn't give it a shot if you completely
throw up a granny shot, man. That's what I would do.
If you completely fell off the map, I'm not sure why you wouldn't want to give it a try.
I agree.
I don't know, but all right. David Stern, really sad news that he's not doing too well after his brain hemorrhage. Obviously, thoughts and prayers go out to him and his family.
I didn't realize he was 77, Mike.
Thought he was younger?
I mean, I wasn't saying that he was like in his 50s, but I didn't realize he was that old. I didn't realize he was 77. I thought maybe early 70s, late 60s. I just didn't put two and two together.
But you know, I mean, he's been the commissioner since 1984, I believe. So you figure that's a 30, you know, to go to 2014, I think, you know, I forget, was that when he, I think that's right around when he got done, but that was 30, that's 30 years. And, you know, figure he was, you know, probably in his mid-30s when he got, you know, his 40s even. When
I mean,
he,
it makes sense now, I suppose.
Right, for sure. But it's just, again, the guy had such a huge influence on the league and helping it to grow, and so you hope that he's able to recover from this. But based on the things that I read, it's not, you know, it looks like he's kind of in a tough spot. So hopefully he'll be able to pull through and, you know, get the care that he needs and get back up. And, you know, we certainly wish him and his family all the best, and hopefully he'll be able to recover.
Yep, and like I said, he was huge for basketball. I know, I don't know if New York City would agree with that, but he was definitely huge for basketball and growing the game and making it to, I mean, where would we be if it wasn't for him with the money and the TV deals and just kind of just improving, bringing like the Africa stuff in, and China, obviously, just kind of expanding the leagues. Huge for NBA, huge for the sport that we love to watch and talk about. And, you know, who knows where we'd be if it wasn't for him. Like, would you and I be talking about NBA, or would we be talking about soccer? I don't know, Mike. You never know.
Let's put it this way. Pre-NBA games, and you don't remember this, but when I was a little kid, you know, NBA finals were on tape delay. So you'd have to watch it. If you wanted to watch it, you could have to watch it, stay up till 11:30 at night.
What's tape? Watch.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Now we obviously have everything all on demand, but back then it was totally, totally different. And, you know, Stern, along with the help of Magic and Bird and Michael Jordan, were able to turn this thing around and really grow the game into the global brand that it is today. And so he deserves a ton of credit for the success that the league had during his time. And I think his legacy continues to be felt as we move forward with Adam Silver as the commissioner. And so, again, thoughts and prayers are out to David Stern and his family. And we wish him hopefully a recovery so that he can get back and continue to live his life.
Yep.
Anything else we missed? The only other thing I was thinking about is just where some of these guys are going to end up in trade. So let's maybe run through real quick before we get out where some of the most prominent names, where we think they're going to end up. A couple of them we've already talked about, but maybe didn't pin down where we think a guy's going to end up. So let's go Andre Iguodala. Where do you think he ends up?
I think he ends up in L.A.
All right.
I'm going to leave it vague, though. I'm going to say L.A.
No, you got to pick a team, man. That's too easy.
I think he ends up in the Lakers.
All right. I think he's going to end up on the Clippers. I don't know why. I don't know. I have a feeling he's going to end up on the Clippers instead of the Lakers. Okay. Kevin Love.
I think he's going to stay a Cav because there's some salary. I think it's going to be an off-season thing. They'll have to work some finagling in the off-season to trade him. I think he gets traded in the off-season, but I'm going to say right now he's staying as a Cav the rest of the season.
All right, I think he's going to end up in Portland. I think it makes too much sense. I don't know how they can make the salaries match up and whatever, but I think Portland still thinks that they can creep back up into series contention.
I mean, that would be a fun starting five to watch, Mike. CJ, Dame, Carmelo, and Kevin Love, that would be kind of fun to watch.
Hey, get Nurkic back.
Oh, and get Nurkic back. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Now, I'm telling you right there, Mike, that's like a big five right there.
It's a fun team. Now, I don't know if they can pull it off, but it's a fun, yeah. It's definitely a fun team. D'Angelo Russell.
Whew. I mean, who wants him?
I heard lots of Minnesota. Minnesota, I think, wants him. They wanted him in the off season.
Yeah, I guess that would probably be the place that I was thinking. That would be about the only place. I don't think anyone else wants him.
But the question again is, what does Minnesota give up? So what I heard was potential that he would go for Robert Covington. And the reason why Golden State would, obviously it's probably not an equal trade in terms of the ceiling of their talent, but if Golden State looks ahead and says, I guess it depends on what they think of, can D'Angelo Russell fit in with all their guys? So if they have Curry and they have Clay and they have Draymond, does D'Angelo fit with that group? Or does Robert Covington as a 3-and-D guy fit better with Steph, Clay? Yeah. So you're basically, if you're Golden State, you're making that trade with the idea that Covington helps you more in the, quote, short term while you're trying to maximize your window of your three stars versus, D'Angelo Russell might be more of a foundational piece, but maybe doesn't fit with the core that they feel is like a championship core. Yep. So I think that's kind of, you know, that's kind of interesting. Kyle Lowry.
I think he stays in Toronto.
I think he stays in Toronto too. And I guess I didn't say, I think D'Angelo Russell stays in Golden State until, if he gets traded, I don't think it happens till the off season.
Okay.
And I think, I agree with you. I think Kyle Lowry stays in, I think he stays in Toronto.
I just think that he stays because of their being so successful now. I don't see a reason for them to trade him. I mean, I just, as wrong, you know, as much as we,
I mean, the question is, could they parlay Lowry into something that fits closer to the timeline of Siakam, Van Vliet, Ananobi as the core guys moving forward? And Lowry's been injured a little bit this year, so they've played without him. So could they then convince themselves and say, hey, we don't really need Lowry, and if we could trade him for a young asset, whether it was a player or maybe a draft pick, might it be worth doing that now where we might not compromise the immediate, you know, our immediate success very much, but we might be able to bring in another piece that could help us in the long term
to build.
And of course,
I just think it would be hard. Listen, they already traded DeMar DeRozan. They lost Kawhi, the free agent.
Right. No, I get it.
It would be hard for the fan. It would be hard to sell to the fan base, in my opinion. Whether it's a good move or not, I think it would be a really hard move to sell to the fan base because you've already traded his buddy DeRozan away. You've already lost Kawhi. I mean, I think it would be a hard sell, in my opinion.
I agree. I think he stays in Toronto.
All right. Chris Paul.
Chris Paul stays in Oklahoma City. I don't think there's a trade out there. I don't know that there's a team that is going to want to eat his salary.
And I think the thing is, if there's a team that wants to eat his salary, they'll go after Kyle Lowry if Kyle Lowry's available. I mean,
Better yet, you go after Jrue Holiday.
Jrue Holiday. Yeah.
I mean, of those three guys, I think at this point, Jrue Holiday's 29. I'm pretty sure. Well, I know he makes less money than Chris Paul, and I'm 99% certain that he makes less money than Kyle Lowry.
I'm sure.
And he's a better player, I think, than probably both of those guys at this.
Yeah, but you get Kyle Lowry's at the end of his contract, right? Or he's got 1 year, only 1 year left on his contract. Is that right?
I think he has a 1 year extension that kicks in next year. So I think he has one more year. I mean, if you're a contending team, any one of those three guys probably helps you. You know, each of them brings a different set of skills to the table, but each one of those guys could help. So again, I'm looking at Milwaukee. You put any one of the three of those guys on the Bucks, and I think it instantly makes the Bucks even more formidable than they already are.
Yeah.
But we'll see what, you know, we'll see what happens from there.
Do you think LaMarcus Aldridge or DeMar DeRozan gets traded?
I don't know. I my gut says no, because I think where they sit in the standings, I think they still can creep up into the playoffs. I'm not sure that Popovich is really, I mean, how long term is he focusing? I mean, they have to understand that they're not winning a title this year, but they could creep back and get back into the seventh seed, which right now they're two games behind. So they could certainly convince themselves that, hey, we could be the seventh seed very, very easily. And if that's the case, do you punt on one or both of those guys? I don't know. My gut tells me they both stay in San Antonio.
Okay.
Covington.
All right. I don't know. I don't have an opinion on him because I kind of forget that he even exists until you say his name. Is that a bad thing?
You're not watching a lot of Timberwolves basketball, is that what you're saying?
No. I mean, do Timberwolves even have – listen, I'll tell you what. The NBA has got to be regretting this whole Pelicans thing. My God, it's kind of like the Browns. They put the Browns on all these national TV games. People were sick of the Browns. Well, now the Pelicans without Zion, people are got to be so sick of watching the Pelicans, and they're so bad.
Well, and they and they're and to be honest, I'm not sure that their parts are better than their whole. For sure.
They don't seem to fit together. They don't seem to play together very well.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a weird team. So speaking of that, Drew Holiday, where does he end up?
If he gets traded, I think Miami is a good spot for him. I think Miami or Miami and Milwaukee. I'm gonna go Miami. Why not?
All right, I'm gonna go out on a limb. I'm gonna say Milwaukee. I have no idea if it's even feasible or possible. But I'm going to try to wish it into existence. I'm going to say Drew Holiday to the Bucks. Now, to go along with that, the other guy on the market from the Pelicans potentially is J.J. Redick.
Yeah. His salary is pretty high for his position, I would assume. I don't know what he's making. I seem to recall him making like $18 million a year. Maybe that's wrong, but...
That sounds about right.
I feel like he signed a 2-year, $36 million contract, but that's just me remembering from July. So there's about a 25% chance that's correct. But I don't know who.
I mean, is there any contender that wouldn't want J.J. Redick? Now, money aside, but is there anybody who's
I don't think so.
I mean, everybody would want.
How about a return to L.A.? How about a Clipper? Let's put him back as a Clipper.
I mean, he could definitely. I mean, again, he helps any team. The question is who can really trade for him,
or if the Lakers don't get Andre Iguodala. Not that they're the same player, but you know they make the move and they can get JJ. That would be Kuzma and something else for JJ. Reunite all those guys. Kuzma on that team too.
That's it. There you go. Just. The Lakers of the Southeast.
Because I definitely think that Griffin will move him. I think Griffin will realize obviously JJ went there because they thought that he was going to be a chance to be a playoffs and teach these young kids. But the playoffs are gone, and JJ at this point in his career wants to be on a contender. He doesn't want to,
He's got however many years he has in the league, he has that playoff streak. So he's been in the playoffs every year of his career. So that is in definite jeopardy if he doesn't get traded. So maybe he'll start agitating to be traded out.
Is he the record for the most years in a row in his career to start?
Could be. I mean, it's got to be. If it's not, it's got to be close. He's got to be right up there, I would think, because of his longevity and. The fact that he's kept that streak going that long. I don't know where he ends up. I mean, I could see him fitting. He fits well with everybody, like I said, and I don't know who really has the assets necessarily to trade for him.
Could he be a buyout? Can they buy him out? Does that work?
That's a good question. I don't know if he's a buyout candidate or not. Because I think he only signed, I don't know if he signed a 1 or 2 year deal. I can't remember.
I'm pretty sure it's a 2 year deal.
Yeah. You think Houston does anything? Can Houston get in the market for any of these guys?
Can they trade Russell Westbrook back for Chris Paul?
I mean, I don't think they're trading Westbrook. The question is there anybody that they would target out of the guys that we just talked about where it would be worth them giving up? I think they could still trade their first round pick for this year, and then you'd be looking at trading either PJ Tucker or Clint Capella probably. Because Eric Gordon still can't be traded, I don't think, till the off season. So
I wouldn't imagine they're going to trade Capella, but I don't know. I don't have any. Listen, that team, I can't stand them. So whatever doesn't make them better is what I want them to do.
You just want them out of the playoffs as soon as humanly possible, right?
Listen, yeah. I mean, I don't wish bodily harm on anyone on the Houston Rockets, but I kind of hope that somehow they don't make the playoffs. That's not going to happen. But
it's not going to happen. Listen, I've said it so many times, but I'll say it one more time. Harden is incredible. The guy's amazing. He makes so many difficult, crazy, impossible shots that if you put him in a time machine and take him back 15 years, people would be just, I mean, it's what he's doing is unbelievable. And yet, to your point, I despise watching him play. I don't think you could ever win a title with him playing the way he does now when that's your best player, because the other four guys in your team never have the ball. They just stand around and wait until he decides he's going to pass it to them. And
hey, speaking of, you know who would be great on that team, Mike? Who? Deion Waiters, baby. Put him there. He could stand in the corner, wave his arms.
Deion's only on. He's only on his third suspension, Jason. So just chill out, okay? He's gonna get things figured. He's still a young guy. He's gonna get things figured out.
The report. Woj's report was yesterday. The Heat are ready to move on from Deion Waiters, and I don't remember who tweeted it, but someone tweeted at Bill Simmons. Waiters Island needs to be evacuated immediately.
Well, let's put it this way. Woj definitely will break some Woj bombs, but that was not one of them. That is not a scoop that he has that nobody else had, that the Heat want to move on. There's no doubt about that.
I think your dog's telling us we've been talking too long.
He is. He's definitely saying, all right, it's time to wrap up this NBA pod. So, everybody, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
As you've listened to the Hoopheads podcast, one common topic that continually comes up in our conversations is character. I'm fortunate to be associated with the Positive Coaching Alliance, a national nonprofit movement that provides valuable tools, training, and resources for coaches, athletes, parents, and administrators that is centered around sports and educational psychology and organizational behavior research. PCA combines this research with practical advice from a national advisory board of top pro and college athletes and coaches who utilize PCA principles at the highest levels of competition. Through a partnership with our local Cleveland chapter of the PCA, we are pleased to offer a discount code to allow you, our listeners, to take a PCA online course for just $20. To take advantage of this offer, visit the store on positivecoach.org and enter the discount code HOOPHEADS20. That's HOOPHEADS20 with two capital H's. Coaches, I hope you'll take advantage of this great offer from the Positive Coaching Alliance and help us continue to grow the game.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.